You're listening to the Study Clicks podcast, your number one source for junior cycle and leaving cert tips. We make exams easier. Hello and welcome back to the Study Clicks podcast. I'm your host Luke, and today I am joined by a very special guest, a fellow member of the Study Clicks team. You guys are used to hearing myself, Andy, and Aaron, all of us you would have seen on the social media. But today I'm joined by Amanda, who is kind of more behind the scenes, and you may not have seen her face before. So Amanda, tell us a bit about yourself and what you do at Study Clicks.
Yeah, hey Luke, I'm delighted to be here. Yeah, typical kind of background staff moment today. My role in Study Clicks is, the official title is Schools Engagement Manager, which is just a really fancy way of saying that I work mostly directly with schools, especially when they come on board for a school license where student access is provided by the school. And I work with teachers, I work with the students themselves, and I work, of course, with the principals to get everything involved in that process off the ground.
Yeah, so if any of you have Study Clicks through your schools, you have Amanda and the schools team to thank for that. But today we're not going to talking about the very intriguing process of how school licenses are set up or anything like that. We're actually talking to Amanda because she has had a very interesting journey with the CAO and Results Day and college in general, and kind of just your career path and progression. So we thought that this would be a great opportunity to get you on the podcast and talk about it for any students who kind of feel like maybe disappointed in the results, or are waiting for the results or their CAO offer, and are kind of like, you know, have a bad feeling that it might not go to plan, or the exams went worse for them than they thought they would. So Amanda very kindly is coming on to kind of share her own story and tell us a little bit about what went on for you. So I suppose, take me back to the start, taking back to your Leaving Cert year. What were your plans? Like, you know, whatever, 18-year-old Amanda, what was she hoping to do?
Yeah, 18-year-old Amanda definitely had her heart set on being a primary school teacher. I'd wanted to be a primary school teacher for pretty much all of secondary school. And even if I think back far enough, it was primary school as well. I think I remember one of the core memories for me is seeing my teacher kind of write on the whiteboard. And I really wanted to do that. You know, I was like, this could be a job where you can use coloured markers and fancy erasers and just like draw and write on the whiteboard. That was probably the little childhood thing for me. You know, some people want to be astronauts. I just wanted to write on the whiteboard. But then that kind of manifested obviously more so in secondary school, and even in TY and stuff. I did work experience in a primary school, and that was a cemented plan for me going into senior cycle, and especially then choosing the CAO courses and filling out that form and stuff. So I probably had my heart set on that.
Yeah, I think like at some stage, kind of everybody wants to be a primary school teacher, because I feel like it's the one profession, like, you know, you kind of, when the realities of capitalism kick in at a young age and you realize you're going to have to get a job after school, the kind of the most experience you have with any kind of job is your teachers, you know, like, and aside from, like, you know, the astronaut and all that stuff that sounds really cool, you know, you see your teachers doing their job every day. So it's kind of, you know, that's where a lot of people get the initial, like, in primary school, they're like, oh, I want to be just like my teacher. But that kind of stuck with you then throughout secondary school. You didn't consider maybe I'll be a secondary school teacher instead. You kind of you locked in with primary school teaching.
In with primary, yeah. Again, I think you're just, it's what you're used to. And I suppose, yeah, as you said, we all kind of experienced that maybe thinking about being a teacher just because we're surrounded by teachers and we're in school all of the time. But it definitely stayed in primary, and I didn't maybe acknowledge it at the time, but in hindsight, and of course, I feel like I'll be saying in hindsight a lot today because hindsight is a great thing. But I think because I had expressed interest in teaching and just the world of education, I was kind of guided towards primary quite naturally, because I suppose the experience of becoming a primary school teacher at third level is just straight in, do a 4-year course and you're qualified. You know, you can go to the likes of the teacher training colleges that facilitate exactly that. So certainly from a kind of in fifth year, like late TY into fifth year, when you start thinking about those things, that kind of seemed like the most straightforward path to achieving what I wanted. So there wasn't much room really for other considerations until later, of course.
Yeah, it definitely is. Those kind of courses are quite attractive in the sense that after the end of the 4 years, you come out and you are a blank, like, you know, you are a primary school teacher, you are a physio, those kind of ones that aren't as like open-ended. I think oftentimes when you're in fifth and sixth, they are kind of the most attractive to students. So obviously your heart was kind of set on primary teaching at the time in school. Was that feasible for you? Like, you know, in terms of points, would it have been a bit of a reach? Like, did you kind of think, okay, I'm going to have to really knuckle down to get these points, or was it kind of realistic?
I think definitely I thought it was realistic. You know, I didn't have any reason to believe that it wasn't. I had known people that had gone on in to become primary school teachers. And, you know, there was a few other people in my year that wanted to be the same. And it seemed very achievable to me at that time. I suppose my one apprehension was you had to get like a certain result in Irish and stuff like that. Like back then, I'm kind of revealing my age now a bit as well. But in my day, it was A, B's and C's. So you had to get the C1 as a minimum in Irish. And that I was probably a little bit nervous about that. But again, I did everything I could do to try achieve that and went to the Gaeltacht and all those things. So yeah, it definitely seemed in reach.
Okay, so then I suppose we've been setting it up for what's to come here, but it didn't go your way in the end on result. Did you kind of know when you were sitting the exams that maybe this wasn't going to plan, or was it a shock to you on results day when maybe you got some less points than you thought you would?
Yeah, I think a bit of both. Like definitely looking back on the exam experience itself, you know, my timetable went away where my exams were over really quick, like almost over just as quick as they started. So it was all a bit of a blur. But I remember at the time feeling like it was going well, or it was going as well as I wanted it. I didn't really have any exams or moments where I felt, okay, that was a bad paper, or I didn't write enough, or I got caught with time. I felt like all the preparation and all the effort I had put in, you know, paid off, at least for that experience. Now, definitely as well, actually in the exams, I remember just really wanting to get them over with. Like that was a huge thing at that time. I suppose I was so, like the word nowadays that wasn't used maybe so much back then either, was like, I was probably burnt out by the process. Like I was just exhausted by thinking about the exams, preparing for them. I had made it such a huge part of my personality, and everything about me was about the Leaving Cert of that time. And, you know, every waking hour was spent preparing for it. And at the time, we didn't have things like the Study Clicks podcast to inspire us to, you know, take breaks and like structure our days.
How ever did you live?
And, So it wasn't as kind of openly talked about, the concept of burning yourself out by kind of overdoing it, especially in that window between mocks and the exams themselves. So when it actually came to the time of doing the exams, I found myself being quite bored with the material and bored with the process. Like I was so kind of sick of it that maybe that played a factor as well, in that, again, I never thought that there was a question or a topic that tripped me up or caught me by surprise. But, you know, obviously I didn't get to look in full detail of my results and my like graded scripts and stuff, but you know, there probably is a little bit of fatigue to be found in those responses and where I dropped marks unnecessarily just because I was so over it by that time. But in saying that as well, I thought they went well. I was happy with it, relieved to have it over, and you know, spent the summer planning on becoming a primary teacher and heading off to you know, the colleges that would achieve that for me. You know, earlier in the year, I'd been to open days and stuff for all the primary teaching colleges in Dublin. And I was, you know, scoping my accommodation options and all these things. There was no part of me that thought it wouldn't happen. And then results day came, you know, I was excited and nervous, you know, the typical feelings. And I went up to the school to get the envelope of results. And I very quickly kind of went away by myself. Like I wasn't a fan of opening up in a group or like experiencing that as in public or anything. I remember I walked out the door of the school, turned the corner and lifted the cert out of the envelope. And at just a quick glance, I saw C's and D's, which was such a shock. I didn't expect A's. I was never really a consistently A student. I knew like some subjects could dip over into A territory, but I was expecting predominantly B's, and predominantly B's would have given me the points I needed. But I was very caught off guard to see some C's and D's, and knew very quickly without even doing the maths that this wasn't going to add up to the points that I needed. And I suppose the turnover between results day and CAO offers is so quick. Like, it's just, you spend the whole of secondary school, obviously, preparing for this day, and then the exams are their own thing. And then you spend the summer waiting and results day, and then suddenly, like a switch, it's, you kind of know where
everything's so drawn out except for that process, you know, like suddenly it's the fastest thing in the world. Exactly. Yeah. So I suppose, like, kind of, so what was the wait, like 2 days or 3 days or something in between?
I think the results were like on a Wednesday, and I think the results were kind of scheduled, like first round was Monday or something like that.
Yeah,
I think
it's quick. It was quick.
It was really, it was a couple of days.
So was that kind of couple of, obviously you said it was kind of, in, you didn't have to do the calculations to know that it kind of hadn't went your way. Was it kind of like instant, kind of like a feeling of dread of kind of like, oh God, what am I going to get on my CAO now? Like, this is not gone my way. Like, were those couple of days, although you said they were very fast, did they go very, very slow, you know, that kind of in between? Was it tough, or were you kind of just like coming to terms with it yourself?
Yeah, I think I knew that unless the points for the courses completely changed and there was, you know, a complete overhaul of how many points you need to be a primary school teacher, I knew that that wasn't going to be an option for me. And I was like, I was really, really upset. And it was just like, it was a huge kind of release. You know, it was a kind of pent up expectation and pent up hope. And then I just, like, I wouldn't be an overly like reactive or emotional person, or, you know, obviously now in the years later, I don't put too much pressure on myself. I had put an awful lot of pressure on myself to achieve those things. And it was through not achieving them that I realized that I could be a little bit kinder to myself and go a little bit easier and kind of have broader expectations of myself. But I was in really inconsolable. My granny lives quite near the secondary school, so I walked from the school down to hers, and my mom and her were there, and I feel so sorry for them even to this day, because like, how do you even respond and support somebody? And I had been quite independent throughout the leaving cert, you know, I'd done my own thing, decided my own course, I didn't have a lot of intervention from like my parents and stuff, so they didn't know how to respond. But I suppose in the back of my mind as well, that while my first three CAO list on the list, the top three was primary teaching courses and colleges, I had put, if my memory serves me correctly, humanities in DCU is number 4 and arts in UCD is number 5. I just, as I knew they were backdoor kind of routes into teaching, in that if you do kind of an arts-based degree, you can go on then do a further qualification to be a primary teacher or a secondary, of course. But I knew that they were on my CAO, and I had actually added them way later, like through kind of guidance as well. Like, I had the primary teaching, you know, kind of when it first opened up in February. And then, you know, I suppose just something clicked in me that I was like, I probably should have a plan C, D and E, you know, and not just kind of go with plan A and B. And I'm so grateful that I did, because it turned out that the only thing I was able to get was my fifth choice on the CAO. And again, if you had told me when I was sitting the leaving cert or preparing for the leaving cert that you will get your fifth choice CAO, I probably have
tweaked out.
Absolutely. It was a worst case scenario for me. I just put it as a safety blanket, because I really wanted to go to college. That was a huge thing as well. Like, I of course wanted to be a teacher and I wanted to do those courses, but I really wanted to move to Dublin and live in the city and have that college experience, you know. I was 19 the summer after my leaving cert, so I was quite on the older end of, you know, my peers, and I was just so ready to move. So that was a huge thing for me as well, that putting the likes of humanities and arts degrees and stuff on the CAO was that my ticket to that as well. And of course, I'm so glad that I did, because I needed it and I got it, and I found myself then when the first round of offers came out, I got that arts degree in UCD, and in less than a week I found myself like on UCD campus for the first time ever, by the way. Like, I didn't go to the UCD open days
open days for the primary school places?
I'd been up like kind of the north side of Dublin, and I'd gone to St. Pat's and all of those, and I was like looking at areas I could live in up there, but I hadn't even been to the south side of Dublin, you know, or got to any of the buses that direction. So I was on campus, you know, about to start orientation week for the subjects I chose were English, history and sociology. You choose three for the joint honours programme. you will continue with two then into second and third year. And I just chose English and history because they were the two subjects that I enjoyed most in school. And yeah. they ended up being my two strongest results on the day as well. So that was kind of in the stars in its own little way. And yeah, I was just doing a course that I had not mentally prepared myself to yeah. do, but I was committed to the process at that point as well.
Well, thankfully you had put it down. I suppose like that's what I know everybody says, like, you know, fill out as many as you can because you never know what's going to happen. I kind of had a similar experience to that. I wasn't disappointed at all in my results. I actually was very happy with my results. So when I got my CAO offers, that's when I got the oh like that was when it hit me of like, oh gosh, like what? Because I got my fourth choice, and like I, if it was any other year, like from the year prior, would have had enough for my first. So it's like, okay. You never know what aspect of it's going to go wrong. It could be the results, it could be the actual offers. So it's always good. Like the kind of only way to be kind of like, I mean, the foolproof plan for both of them is to just put down as many options as possible. Because like you said, a huge part of it as well, I know it is so important to like want to do the course and want to do that, you know, to be a primary school teacher. But like, I really wanted to go to college too, you know, like I really wanted to like have that college experience. And, you know, like no matter what the course was, I'm sure I could like have found my way, you know, done a master's or something. I kind of was just really like itching to go to college. Obviously it's not for everybody, but I just knew it was for me. So like, I was like, get me there. So you mentioned then that you ended up taking the offer that you were given. Did you kind of initially, did you consider maybe, I know you said you were kind of on the older end, so maybe you didn't, but did you consider repeating or anything like that? Did that kind of cross your mind?
Yeah, it's a fair question. Repeating the Leaving Cert was just not a prospect for me. I had done TY as well, so I had clocked my 6 years in secondary school. You know, I spoke already about being exhausted by the process by the time the exams came around. I could not imagine myself doing it all again and hoping for a different result. It wasn't in my nature. It wasn't my kind of preference. I was more kind of open to just, okay, now that plan A and plan B and plan C haven't gone to plan, let's just keep rolling with plan D and see how we get on. And what I did end up doing, just kind of out of stubbornness, even though I didn't, I knew it wouldn't affect my points or my choice, I sent my business and my biology paper back to be regraded. And I did actually go up a grade in business for that. And again, it didn't drastically affect my points or anything like that, but it was more so a pride thing. You know, business
the principle
is
an
example.
I
was like happy with how I studied that subject. I had been getting good grades. I was kind of counting on it to be a subject I would get a strong grade in. And I was just kind of annoyed that that didn't happen. So that did when I submitted it for recorrection. But by the time I got the results back for the recorrection, you know, it was October. I was already a month in the course. Like I was living in Dublin. Yeah. Like it just seemed like a completely different version of myself. But I'm glad I did it, of course, you know, just to see what else I could get out of the process. All those options. I'm so glad that I put the kind of arts degree down. And I do remember as well, like there was kind of maybe a negative perception towards an arts degree at that time because it typically is lower points and you do choose subjects that you have been studying already for years. And, you know, it wasn't really the go-to thing. I can't speak for everyone or I can't speak for every school either, but I certainly recall like kind of in the bubbles that I was in, nobody was really like putting an arts degree as their first choice, you know, unless of course they wanted to be a secondary school teacher. That was a different kettle of fish. But there was the kind of perception of arts degrees as the plan D. And I suppose I was a little bit self-conscious about that as well. You know, everyone who knew me knew that I wanted to be a primary school teacher, and, you know, my family, my friends. And when that wasn't kind of coming to fruition as naturally as everyone had hoped and I was pursuing the arts degree route, I was a little bit self-conscious of that. And but it wasn't enough to kind of stop me, because again, I was just happy to commit to the plan that was presented to me and make the most of it. And I always knew that like if the degree wasn't right for me or the course wasn't right, I could go back to the drawing board after a while, but I was open to giving it a good shot. And again, in hindsight, I'm so glad that I did. I didn't let those kind of perceptions about an arts degree kind of overrule me. Like, I put it on the CAO form for a reason, and I'm so glad that but I did.
But you did, yeah.
And it's been the makings of me as a result.
Yeah. So obviously, I kind of suppose my next question was, did you enjoy it? But it sounds like you definitely did. Can you kind of walk me through? I know you kind of briefly touched on it. So you go in studying 3 and then it goes down to 2. Or yeah. I think a lot of colleges, and I, from year to year, it kind of changes how it all works.
Yeah, of course.
It kind of depends. But what was the process like for you? And kind of while you were going through it, how did you feel about, you know, it? Like, were you enjoying it the whole way along? Or was it kind of something that you preferred the end rather than the start?
Yeah, I went straight in. Like, I always loved English. So that was a natural kind of affection for me. You know, I was more than happy to be walking the halls of the School of English in UCD. History was a natural second for me because of how I enjoy the subject in school, and sociology just as the on the list of subjects that were available to choose for the joint honours programme, that really appealed to me. You know, I was kind of like, just sounded really interesting. And then while I was in on the course, I think an important thing to note as well, like in my process, I was about a month in the course when I totally put a pin in the idea of being a primary school teacher. I don't know. It was like I left the process of the Leaving Cert and the secondary school environment and very quickly realized, I was like, I actually don't want to be a primary teacher. And maybe I had built up a little bit of a hostility around like not getting it when I really wanted it. And that was probably a factor. But I said, look, here I am now. I'm in this degree. I'm studying English and history. I might as well be a secondary school teacher. You know, at the end of the day, I'll still get to write on the whiteboard as a secondary school teacher. So.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so I pursued that. And I obviously knew when you go into second year, you drop one of your subjects. So sociology was kind of on the way out. But I also acknowledged at that time, while I was loving English and everything, all the modules and everything involved, I wasn't loving history. Like I wouldn't have classed myself as a huge history buff anyway. Like I'm kind of interested in it generally, and I enjoyed the secondary school curriculum. But history at third level was just different. It was like really far back, and the books were so thick, and it was you know, it was really, really long ago. And I just wasn't, like, I was attending the classes and doing the assignments and getting by, but I was kind of thinking, I don't know if I can do this for the full 3 years. And I'm unsure then if I want to go ahead and teach it. So that was kind of niggling at me. And I was disappointed maybe by that. But I was also optimistic, thinking, you know, it'll change in second year. There's other modules and stuff like that. So I was still considering that. But in around that time, when you're kind of choosing your two to progress into second year with, the single honours program within UCD, the School of English, who would have run the single honours course separately, way smaller course size, you know, only about 25 people. I think it was about in around 500 points that year to actually pursue single honours English through the CAO. The School of English did a call out just to say that due to some like capacity and things, that they are open to having joint honours students join the single honours programme. And you just had to fill out an application form and I think kind of like write a short little personal statement about why you want to pursue English as a single honours. And I said, why not? You know, what's another application at this point? I'll put myself out there. And if it's meant for me, you know, it won't pass me by. Like that is such a huge mantra of mine, both like personally, but professionally and in the years since college and school and stuff. What's for you will not pass you by. So just put yourself out there. And if it's meant for you, it'll come. But so I did that. And I actually ended up getting accepted into the single honours programme. So by August of the following year, second year, I was so far from being a primary school teacher, and I wasn't even going to be an English and history secondary school teacher at this point. I was just sitting in the English single honours course. Now, I believe that that is a unique experience. Like, I would not recommend anyone to kind of join a joint honours arts programme and have their heart set on becoming a single honours anything within the year of doing that. Like I think it was just, I don't think it's even a thing that happens annually. It was just something they had the availability stars aligned on
for
the
that
program.
One. Yeah,
exactly. So that obviously opened the subject up to me massively. You know, I got to do different modules as a single honours student. I got to actually write a dissertation, you know, a 10,000 word dissertation in third year and kind of commit myself to that research project. And ended up ultimately graduating with a BA in English. And at that point, the natural next step for being a secondary school teacher was to do the master's in education, that 2-year PME program. And that was plan A again at that point. But yeah. I'm still not a secondary school teacher either.
I suppose that's what like is interesting to me. It's like you said that the thing that was most attractive to you in fifth and sixth year was the fact that you're going to leave college in 4 years' time and be a primary school teacher. Like it's like a, you know, how was the kind of like the mental switch when you were studying even like first sec, was your course 3 or 4 years long in
3 years
UCD?
Yeah, I could have done an Erasmus, but I didn't.
Yeah, so if you did like, so for those 3 years, I think like you said, after a month you realized, you know, your lifelong dream of being a primary teacher, you weren't that actually interested in, which I kind of want to come back to like and talk a bit about kind of how you can really think you want something and then realize you don't. But like, I suppose, how was that kind of switch from knowing exactly what you thought you were going to be to like being actually in the course and like closer to the end product and still kind of being like, will I, will I, won't I? I'm like studying English now. I gave up the history. So maybe I don't want to be a history teacher. You know, kind of like, did you find that that's kind of something that came with age, or was it because you had already been like disappointed and you didn't want to put all your eggs in one basket? Like kind of talk me through how you kind of switched your mindset.
Well, I definitely think the disappointment of not getting primary teaching the first time played a factor. I was like, okay, then like, if you don't want me, I don't want you kind of thing. Yeah. I was a bit stubborn in that way. But again, I respect that a huge part of me wanted that and I was still fully open to pursuing it. But I think what really contributed was starting to study English at third level opened me up to the subject more than ever before. And I started engaging with topics and authors and genres within English that secondary school didn't give me the option to. And so I hadn't been exposed to the subject to this level before. And I was really loving it and I was really enjoying it. And I started to kind of paint this image for myself of maybe I'll just be an English secondary school teacher and I'll make English really fun and accessible. And I'll be like some of the brilliant English teachers I had that made me have such a grow for the subject in this way. And that's what kind of flipped the switch. You know, primary wasn't going to really give me that. Again, I was still respecting the part of myself that like the sound of being a primary school teacher and like teaching those fundamental skills that are involved in being a primary teacher. But because I was really enjoying my engagement with English as a subject, I could start to see myself in an English second level classroom really naturally.
Yeah. And then I suppose you aren't in an English secondary level classroom. Like, you know, at what point then was it kind of towards the end of the course that you thought maybe, or was it kind of a thing of you said, oh, I might come back to it and then never did, or like realize maybe you didn't want to, or you'd prefer to like progress your career in another direction? Or was it that you decided by the end of it that it wasn't going to be for you?
As I said, you would have needed to do the PME to become an actual secondary school teacher. So that was looking ahead into a 2 years master's, like it's a postgraduate qualification. So, you know, two main things contributed to me not going straight into that. There was that natural desire to just like not be a student for a little while. Yeah. You know, I'd gone straight from secondary school, 3-year course. I found it really hard to just like keep going with that. And then financial, of course, was another thing. Like, you know, it's a postgraduate degree, so there's no like, grant assistance and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's more expensive in general, I think, isn't it? The actual year is more expensive.
Exactly. So that kind of put me off, or I at least thought, not right now. You know, I'll take a break for a couple of years. I'll save, I'll see the world, and I'll come back to it. And admittedly, it's kind of still labeled as something like that. It's like, you know, almost 6-7 years, whatever it is, since I graduated from university, it's still labeled as that thing I might come back to.
So it's still something you'd be interested in.
Yeah, for sure. But what I did do that kind of scratched that immediate itch of like wanting to be a teacher, like, you know, through this entire time, I still want to teach. That's a fundamental part of me. And what kind of provided that to me in a quicker way was doing a CELTA qualification. So a lot of people might not actually be familiar with a CELTA qualification, but they would be more familiar with TEFL, you know, this qualification that you need to teach English as a foreign language. The difference between CELTA and TEFL is probably a natural question, but the core difference is a CELTA qualification is an in-person kind of intensive 4-week course that involves like observed teaching practice and loads of assessments, and you build this kind of portfolio of of assignments and stuff like that. And you have that cert. It's actually powered by kind of Cambridge University in that way. The C in CELTA is Cambridge.
Okay.
Where TEFL is kind of, it's an online capacity. It doesn't, if you can do it over the course of a year, 2 years. It's the same, similar type of qualification, but the CELTA really appealed to me because, you know, it was kind of a straight in 4 week commit yourself. I really like the idea of doing the teaching practice in person and actually have that being observed and graded because, you know, all the while wanting to be a teacher, I hadn't stood on top in top of the classroom, you know, I hadn't been in that position, and I was really excited by the opportunity to do that. So I did that course quite soon after the June, like following finishing college in May, and that then qualified me to teach English as a language both in Ireland and abroad. And that's exactly what I did for a couple of years up until COVID. So I that just ticked so many boxes for me. You know, I got to write on the whiteboard. I got to, I planned the lessons. I taught both teenagers and adults during that time. Yeah. I loved working with both. I got to experience everything about teaching that I always wanted to experience. Mm. Obviously, I was teaching the English language, and with that, I was teaching myself the English language, you know, learning things about English grammar and, you know, kind of things that you don't learn in school when it comes to grammar. Like teaching that to myself was kind of fun, and then ultimately teaching it to other people, and everything involved with that world of English as a language ticked so many boxes for me and opened so many doors as well. So that's what I did for a while. And then up until COVID, I kind of stopped that. COVID kind of put a natural pause on that sector. And then I was kind of open to exploring other careers and other options. And that's when I thought to myself, like, what can a girl with an English degree and some teaching experience as English as a foreign language do? You know, if I don't want to teach it, or I'm not ready to go into that master's that I mentioned, what can I do with myself? But I was still very passionate about working in the education sector. And that was kind of a fundamental for me. So I said, if I have that kind of affection for the sector, I'm sure I'll find something. And that's what I've done. So I've worked with in the education technology sector for the last few years, obviously most recently at StudyClix, but other companies as well. So still getting to use my passion for education, but just in so many different ways.
Yeah, and I find it really interesting. I think your whole story is really interesting. But like the initial kind of feeling of wanting to be a primary school teacher, while you said that, like, you know, that kind of ran out quick after, you know, the disappointment, and then you decided yourself, that kind of theme of education and like wanting to, you know, help people in that way and maybe write on the whiteboard, you know, that's kind of continued all through kind of like your professional career. Like even in the job that you're doing now, you're still working every day with like teachers and principals and schools, and you know, you give seminars as well. Actually, some of you might know Amanda from some seminars given to, like, don't you do this, the student seminars as well,
the student trainings in schools and the teacher trainings?
Amanda may have been up on your whiteboard at some point giving you a training, but like, you know, like you kind of still have that you actually become the whiteboard. you're literally up on the projector.
That's full circle moment. Brilliant.
But like, you know what I mean, like you still kind of have that like passion for education, and you didn't lose that just because of that initial disappointment, or because, you know, like you said, there were reasons that you couldn't like immediately do the master's that still didn't knock it out of you. You did the like the CELTA qualification too, so you kind of scratched that itch. So it's like, it's really refreshing to see that like you did kind of in a roundabout way get somewhere similar to what you were trying to get, even with the disappointment and stuff like that. I think as well, it's like really valuable. I think you hear these stories all of the time of like, you know, somebody maybe that wanted to do nursing or even like kind of other types of medicine or kind of like in the medical field, they will have maybe not done as well in their leaving cert as they hoped. They'll do a PLC. They'll get the kind of, people talk about the back door into it. So I feel like your story is kind of an example of like, you didn't get the results you wanted, but you also didn't take a backdoor into what you initially wanted either. You know, like it's not, this would have been interesting if you had said like, oh yeah, I did this, then I did the arts degree, and then I did do, you know, is it the HDIP? What's it called?
It used to be called the HDIP, and then, it's still a professional master's in education, but you can do it for primary or secondary,
So like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people in your course, like in the arts course, probably did go on and do what you had been saying you were going to. But I like that you didn't. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that makes it interesting, because I think people will listen to something like this after they get the results and realize, okay, maybe say, for example, they want to do primary school teaching in Mary Eye. They don't get it. Everyone's saying, grand, just do the arts way. But kind of sometimes that can actually put you off to the point that you're like, oh, I don't want it. Like you said, like, well, maybe I don't want to be a primary school teacher. And there is kind of other options. Just because you take like a backdoor route into something doesn't mean you're going to end up with that. But it could be your choice, not like the CAO's choice, like it was initially. So I think I just think it's really valuable information that, like, not everything has to be like a 7-year process to get to where you wanted to go. You could find somewhere else along the way.
Or you just fundamentally don't need to decide at 17 what you're going to do for the rest of your life.
And I mean, that's the big
I'm aware
one.
That, like, you know, I'm conscious of sounding cliche and stuff, because, like, especially people who did their Leaving Cert this year and are waiting on offers and will go through this exact process, whether they're happy with the outcome or not, they're going to have so many people around them telling them that, like, you know, it's not the be all and end all, and they'll say what's for you won't pass you, and it'll just be so full of cliches. But I think if you can, like, fundamentally identify within yourself that you're passionate about a sector, or you see yourself in a certain type of role that's related to, like, a subject area that you're already studying in school, like, you know, pursue the likes of an arts degree, you know, or, you know, do those subjects at third level. And you'd be like, when you do an arts degree, the only thing you can't do is not teaching, you know, it's not just you're guaranteed to be a teacher of that subject. Now, I had no idea the amount of jobs in the education sector that aren't teaching. You know, when I expressed that interest in education and in teaching while in secondary school and filling out my CAO form, I was kind of guided to putting primary teaching on the CAO, and that kind of influenced my thinking about what I wanted to do. I had no idea that there's so many companies, there's so many branches of the sector, there's so many things that you can do within just education as an example, but the same applies to any sector that will fulfill you in the same way and in ways that you don't realize when you are a Leaving Cert student. And, you know, I labeled myself as somebody who wanted to be a teacher such a long time ago. I've done versions of teaching, of course, but the consistent throughout all of that for me was the education sector and working with schools and teachers and being in this bubble. And I've kind of rinsed everything I can out of that desire and that passion to work in that sector and I still haven't been in a primary or a secondary school classroom as a professional teacher.
Yeah.
But I feel fulfilled regardless of that, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of, like you said, kind of the more obvious jobs are like primary teacher, secondary teacher, nurse, doctor, lawyer, all these kind of things. Whereas, like, actually within those, there is, like, you know, like you said, the easiest thing for you to say was like, oh yeah, primary school teacher, because I want to do that. But really, like, it was more of an education thing. And you kind of have to delve into that. And doing the arts degree kind of gives you an opportunity, like, to do that.
Exactly. There's so many jobs there that you don't even know.
Yeah, exactly. Jobs that you don't even know exist. Yeah, like that.
And companies. Like, yeah, like here I am in StudyClicks as a schools engagement manager. Like, you know, nothing on my CAO form or my college experience or anything about my planned professional path saw me in this role in this company doing this job. But here I am and I'm happy with it. And my degree has served me well as well. I think it's important to say that at no point during any job interview or any job I've applied for, did I feel like my English degree or my arts degree did me a disservice or wasn't enough. And like, I've been able to sit in every interview and apply what I've studied and what I've worked in to those roles. And so that kind of diversity is such a pro of that route as well, I think.
Yeah. And a lot of places, like a lot of applications for things, they just require that you have a degree of some sort, because I think above all else, I mentioned this in a previous podcast with Donica, a guidance counselor, but it's kind of just proof that you committed to something for 3 or 4 years. You know, like you said, you did a thesis, like that's like a good sign. You know, you're a hard worker, you've gotten all these skills, you know, obviously you're proficient on technology and just in general, like, you know, Microsoft 365, like it's actually amazing the kind of stuff that people can kind of like tell from just you doing a degree. I just think any kind of degree is great for that. But I suppose if you had to give some advice to somebody listening to this, they might be like crying or like they could just be like really nervous for the results. If you could give just a couple of words of wisdom on like people who are worried about their CAO choices or not getting what they wanted, what would you say? I think you've covered most of it, but just to kind of like wrap it up, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's like two main things that I would like somebody listening to this to take away, if they are in that kind of in-between stage, is that, yeah, I think I'm a huge advocate for the arts degree, obviously, at this point. It's worth more than it gets credit for, I think. And there's nothing to be ashamed of, like, just taking two subjects that you've already studied for 5 or 6 years and continuing with them into third level. And it doesn't mean you have to teach them. But I think my biggest advice to anyone who's maybe unsure of what they want to do or are forced into a position where they don't get what they wanted to do is just choose the path that is given to you regardless of your results or regardless of your offers, and just trust in the process a bit, and you'll be so surprised about what opens up to you along the way. You know, again, in my experience of pursuing the English and history degree at third level, I'm so far from being an English and history teacher, and all of the avenues and all the opportunities that have opened me along the way are because I kind of just went into that a bit blind and didn't think of the outcome as much. You know, I didn't have a clean cut plan at the end when I knew that teaching maybe wasn't going to work out. It's just, there's so many avenues, so many opportunities. And if you're a hard worker and you're willing to throw your hat in the ring for anything, like, paths will open up to you. And again, I know that that's just not what somebody who's just disappointed by the Leaving Cert wants to hear. And there's somebody who's in that position that I was in, like, having a meltdown over my results and thinking it's an absolute disaster that I can't be a primary teacher. But just take it from me at this point that, I'm going to say it again, I think it's the third time I've said it now, what's for you will not pass you by, my friend.
Yeah, so there's a reason everybody says it all the time. Like, it is just true.
It's so true. It's so annoyingly true. And I can apply it to so many areas of my life. But yeah, trust the process, which is so cliche, but do it anyway.
Yeah. No, Amanda, honestly, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom. Honestly, I just thought that was so interesting and kind of a very different, like, point of view to what we're used to kind of hearing. And I hope, and I know it will have helped anybody listening to this podcast that maybe is disappointed with results, or has accepted an offer that they maybe didn't want to get offered in the first place. So thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, I mean, we should have you on the podcast more often. You're great. I'm sure you have lots of other wisdom to share. So thanks a million.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.